Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The bad news is, fast food prices across the nation are increasing. In some cases, double-digit percent increases. The good news is, for Columbus has the most affordable fast food meals. But you're still going to pay over $10 on average for that meal. We're looking at fast food this hour, from the high cost to the slowdown in consumer consumption. And we're asking, what is the future of fast food? We begin by looking at how menu prices have changed over the years with Josh Cobert, senior content marketer at Finance Buzz. Welcome to All Sides, Josh.
Thanks for having me.
So fast food was once a budget-friendly option for people, whether it was office workers grabbing a quick lunch or a busy family who didn't have time to make dinner. But costs recently have made that more prohibitive. Why is fast food not as affordable anymore?
There's a lot that goes into it. There's a couple key factors that really have gotten us to where we are now. A big one is, with a lot of things recently, the pandemic did truly set things into a sort of alternate dimension economics-wise. We all heard it time and time again, supply chains were down. Also, a lot of people were getting sick, and it was harder to find staffers, harder to find people to be in the stores making the food. It was a totally different time where franchises and companies had to adjust, and you know, they had to pay more to get their supply chains in order. They had to pay more to make sure there were people manning the grills, manning the stores, handing food out. Like that was a very real element, a very real thing that, you know, the national inflation rate in that time, it's supposed to be about 2% per year. It went up like 15% between 2021 and 2022. It was legitimately crazy, and companies responded. That being said, they probably responded a little bit more aggressively than they needed to. And that's sort of ties into another big element that I think is part of this, is a lot of these major fast food companies are publicly traded. They have a sort of commitment and a duty to shareholders to sort of meet profit goals and margins and produce value quarter over quarter. And one easy way to do that, to ensure that that's happening, is to pick a couple menu items that are popular here and there, raise the price just a little bit, because that'll make your overall profit margins go up without sacrificing too many customers. And the problem becomes when you sort of have to do that every quarter after quarter after quarter, year after year after year, those incremental tiny changes that you think no one's going to notice add up. And that gets us to this point now where everybody's noticing.
Yeah.
And we've all sort of seen what has happened when you do that time and time again, especially if you maybe push the button a little bit more than was justified given the circumstances. And I think that's, for a lot of these companies, that's sort of what it is. Is I found generally when you run a business with the main goal being to provide value to shareholders, a lot of times you sort of reduce the value to the actual customers every day, you know, day in and day out.
We'll get into some of the numbers in just a minute, but what you said there, so they've raised the prices every quarter a little bit here and there, but it adds up over time. So consumers are now noticing. Are they visiting less, or are they just buying less when they do eat there?
I'm not a total expert. I get this feeling, the sense that people are visiting less. One thing that sort of sparked my own interest and like our whole approach to our big study on this was, I spend a lot of time online. I love fast food, actually. I'm a huge fan. I love a ton of different restaurants. Anytime there's something new, I'm excited to go try it. And I spend a lot of time online on like subreddits and websites dedicated to these restaurants and companies. And a lot of times you'll see someone who will randomly post like, hey, I was going through my camera roll and I found this picture from 2015 of a menu board at McDonald's or Burger King or Taco Bell, and they'll post it up. And the comments, these things get tons of engagement, and all the comments are going like, here's what it is at my store today. That's crazy. Look at the difference on this item and this item and this item. Or someone will just pick one item. They'll say, look, here's my receipt. I bought this one thing. It cost me $1 just 6 years ago, and it's, you know, $2.99 now. something like that. And people get engaged. People are talking about this stuff online with each other a whole lot more and sort of encouraging themselves, each other to be like, hey, the only way to make this worth it is if you become an expert at the app to get deals or find coupons somewhere. Like they're trying to tell each other, like, if you want to enjoy it, here's how. But there's a lot of commiserating online about like, this isn't affordable. This is a problem. Something has got to change. And I think that's one way people are doing it. And they're also suggesting alternatives. Like one thing that I see time and again in those same kind of threads is more fast casual chains. People are realizing places like Applebee's or Chili's in particular have always had deals that are about 10, 11, $12 for a one person combo meal where you get a side, a drink, and a burger or an entree. And those prices have stayed a lot steadier in a lot of cases than fast food. And people are going, hey, fast food used to be $7 for a combo, and it made sense to do that when you needed a quick meal. If it's 10, 11, 12 now, why not just go to the nicer restaurant with the nicer atmosphere where someone's going to serve it to you and they can refill your fries or whatever if it's going to cost the same price? I think that's maybe something too, is people are looking at all alternatives and going, the fast food was the cheap option. It's
It's
not.
not.
Why would I still pick it over maybe a nicer experience?
In your research, you looked at the big chains. You had McDonald's, Wendy's, Taco Bell, Starbucks, Chipotle, the list goes on. You looked at the price of key menu items over 10 years. So you looked at from 2014 to 2024. And some of the findings were surprising, but let's start with the Big Mac, because it's the biggest one, so to speak, the Big Mac. Tell me what happened with McDonald's pricing in that 10-year period.
So, based on the sources we had, we found, a pretty reliable source that tracks these things and puts them up on a semi-nationwide kind of basis. It's sort of location dependent with Big Macs, and it still is. McDonald's is particularly location dependent, but we tried to find a baseline. We found in 2014 it was about $3.99 for the sandwich by itself. By 2024, it was $5.99. So pretty big increase on the Big Mac, and that was actually one of the smaller increases on a McDonald's menu item out of everything we looked at. That's like 50%, something like that, in that time frame. It's a jump. And like I said, there's a whole bunch of stuff. The McChicken was one of the big ones. That used to be on the dollar menu. There's a lot of places where it's $2.99 now or $3. Like that's insane. That's a 200% increase in just 10 years.
And
It's hard to
inflation
really
is, yeah,
justify that.
right. And inflation is up, but not by
No,
200%.
in
Yes.
that same time frame, based on what we saw, it was about 31%. And again, half of that was just like 2020 to 2022 when the whole world went crazy because of everything.
Well, going back to McDonald's prices, I was complaining the other day that I remember when a hash brown at breakfast was 99 cents, and now at my store it's 2.19, and I was like, just one hash brown, 2.19. Oh no.
Yeah, we did actually a separate study later just about breakfast foods, and I think across the board for, I don't know what it is with potatoes, hash browns were on all these menus and they were one of the bigger items just like pretty consistently in terms of increase. I don't know what's going on with that
We
specifically.
should look at the potato industry then, I guess. All
Yeah.
right. So, and then it depends on what you order. But I have found recently that I can feed my family of four at Chipotle for almost the same exact price as McDonald's or Wendy's. So we tend to not pick the traditional fast food. Like Chipotle is not quite as fast, I guess, as McDonald's and Wendy's, but it's pretty much the same. So have you seen things like that where people are picking the Chipotles and the Paneras more so than McDonald's and Wendy's because it's all the same price now.
I do think there has been a little bit of a move to the higher end stuff. And it's the same thing I was talking about with where people are even going to fast casual, not just fast food. It's like if this is a slightly elevated experience, which Chipotle always kind of has been, I think in people's minds at least, it's a slightly elevated experience. It's, like I said, it's not quite fast food. There's not a drive-through, but you can get through the line pretty quick. People have always said like it's a slightly better experience. It comes with a slightly higher price. Now, if the prices are the same, again, why not go to the place that makes the, in your mind at least, you think is a better, it's a better meal, it's a better experience, it's a better place to go. I think there has been a little bit of a shift towards that where people are just like, I'm gonna treat myself because even fast food counts as a treat at the same price point now. For some people it used to be utilitarian, I could get a ton of calories, carbs, feed myself really on the cheap. If it's not cheap, go with what's gonna taste best to you. And I think people are starting to do that.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the rising cost of fast food with Josh Cobert, senior content marketer at Finance Buzz. So from the $5 footlong at Subway to the $1 menu at McDonald's, these fast food chains over time have always promoted their affordability. But have you seen that dropping off in your study as well? I feel like there's not as many items on, if there is a dollar menu, there's not as many items on it, or they come on and off very quickly. Are you seeing that there's fewer deals?
Yeah, there are fewer deals. And I think one interesting point about like the $5 footlong and maybe even the dollar menu is it's interesting to look at the history from sort of the business side of those kinds of deals. The $5 footlong, as far as I understand it, was always kind of a loss for franchises, for Subway ownership. They didn't really like it. The sandwich was a very, very thin profit margin, if any. And the hope was you'd buy a chips and a drink and they'd make their money that way.
Mm-hmm.
They increased that to a $6 footlong at one point nationwide. And I think it just didn't have the same zing as $5. It's an easy price point. But I think that kind of stuff was always we'll give you one or two cheap things and we'll heavily promote it with the hope that you'll buy a bunch of other stuff that's a higher profit margin for us. Come in for the one thing, get the other stuff. And I think it probably reached a point where it just didn't, you couldn't economically hit those really easy to understand price points and still justify it. You know what I'm saying? $5 was something that stuck in people's brains. $1 menu made sense. But after a point, there is a legitimate case where, you know, materials cost, labor cost, whatever, supersede that little bit. And whatever margins you were making on the extra stuff maybe isn't worth it anymore. And that's probably what's happening. That being said, you know, after our article came out and a lot of other people started talking about it, McDonald's did reintroduce last year a $5 meal deal. They already had it in the works for a while before our article, so I'm not taking full credit for it, just a little bit. But they did bring back a $5 meal deal, and I saw an article just a couple weeks ago that was reporting that McDonald's had to sort of make a deal with their franchisees that they'll take a loss on most of those meals, especially the ones that are actually $5. Because they are trying to get their name back in the affordability conversation. But that's what sort of the reality of it is those really nice price points that made sense and sounded like affordability are tough to maintain and still turn a profit. As much as I don't want to give too much credit to big corporations that I think are doing just fine for the most part, it is hard. I think maybe in 10, 15, 20 years, whatever, if inflation keeps up, we might reach a point where $10 seems reasonable and there's a $10 value menu. When you've got those easy demarcations, 5, 1, 5, 10, maybe we'll see that again and we'll come back around culturally on how we sort of think about things affordability wise. But yeah, you're right. It's just tough. I think Taco Bell actually has one of the better value menus. They still have a whole like 10 item list, but it's $3 or less. It doesn't stick in your brain the same way. And I think
it's not a dollar menu. Yeah.
Right. And it's not a dollar menu. It's not a $5 foot long. It's not catchy. It's not a point that sticks in your brain. So even though it exists and they've had it out for a couple of years and I like a ton of stuff on it, it doesn't have the same ring, the same zing. It doesn't stick the same way. And it doesn't drive that affordability conversation you're talking about in the same way, just because of that.
Whenever you were making this list of fast food price increases, what restaurants still offer the best bang for your buck? Because, I mean, it's just basically coffee, but of all of them, Starbucks was the lowest for the increases in that 10-year period. So yeah. Is Starbucks the best bang for your buck?
Starbucks is up there. One you talked about earlier, Panera Bread, actually is relatively low. It's about 50%. It's still higher, but considering some of these other places are doing way more on average, Panera's pretty good. Subway actually pretty good in terms of their price, keeping their prices down. I think those are sort of your best bets. As much as it's sort of tough to be like, I really don't want to pay $10 for a Subway sub or $12 in some cases if it's like a hot one. It is a lot of food, you know. That is one of those things where you actually do get a pretty good value. You can get two meals out of it, and at that point, maybe it feels a little better in your brain to pay that amount for things. And then Starbucks. The interesting thing about Starbucks is they were always called overpriced coffee to start with, and maybe now it's sort of leveling off where it's just normal priced coffee.
Yeah.
They're getting to.
Everyone made fun of buying a $5 coffee, and if it's $6 now, you're like, it was whatever.
That's not too bad.
I mentioned in the introduction, too, that Columbus, Ohio has the most affordable fast food prices. I mean, I know prices vary throughout the country, but can you talk to me about that? Why does Columbus stand out as being affordable?
That's a great question. I think a lot of affordable things, a lot of things that are affordable in general, whenever we do any of these studies, we just did a big study on like turkey prices for Thanksgiving. A lot of affordable ones are in Midwest states. I think the Midwest is really well located to we go back, I mean, honestly, it kind of goes back to one of the first things we talked about, the supply chain. A lot of beef, a lot of cheese, a lot of supplies and products that go into fast food kind of are grown in this Midwest region, and also it's centrally located. It's easy to get the stuff that's from the East Coast to the Midwest, whereas it's a lot harder to get things across other parts of the country. I think that is probably a big part of it, is it's just easier to get the supplies where they need to. It's cheaper, more affordable. So you don't need to have such a high overhead when you pass that on to the consumers, because it's not costing quite as much to get it into the store in the first place.
So you don't have to drive the chicken and the cheese as far to get it to
Right.
Midwest states as it would if you were getting it, taking it all the way to Maine or all the way to Arizona. It might take a,
Right.
it makes it cost more. Yeah. Well, we have been speaking with Josh Cobert, senior content marketer at Buzz at Finance Buzz. Sorry, senior content marketer at Finance Buzz. Thank you so much for joining us today, Josh.
Of course, thank you for having me.
And coming up, we're talking about current trends in the fast food and fast casual restaurant world. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. There's no shortage of fast food and fast casual restaurants for consumers to choose from. However, increased competition and changing public tastes can result in once popular chains becoming a thing of the past. Our look at what is causing a slowdown in the fast food industry continues with a look at the national scene. Joining us now is Sam Okus, editor-in-chief for the nation's Restaurant News. Welcome to All Sides, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
So we just talked about the increase in the fast food menu prices in recent years and how all the fast food is more expensive. So in addition to increasing prices, what challenges do you see happening right now in the restaurant industry?
So many. And I mean, obviously worked into the prices is food cost, labor cost, rent cost. Everything is more expensive to run a restaurant. That's why you have these higher prices. But on top of that, you also have saturation. There are too many restaurants. There's about 1 million restaurants in the United States. And when you think about how many people there are and how many restaurants there are, it's kind of out of balance. And so there are so many restaurants for people to choose from that each individual restaurant has to fight extra hard to get the attention of the customer. And when they have to do that while also running a tight ship, it's just a really challenging business.
And when you say there's too many restaurants, they're all kind of different. I mean, it's a wide variety, but is it kind of whenever you see that, like, if there's a McDonald's, then there's definitely a Wendy's across the street, and then there's an Arby's a couple blocks down. Is it that they all seem to concentrate in the same area? Is that a problem too?
Well, they do that strategically, right?
Yeah.
Because you always know the corridors where there's a lot of traffic. You know where people are going to be looking for a meal. There's a ton of data on this, so they don't do that accidentally. Really, it's that you have restaurants just everywhere, and now where you have tools like DoorDash and you have delivery. It no more is about I'm going home from work on my way back home and I'm going to pick up a meal at a certain place and the restaurant is there. Anymore, it's that I'm going to press a button on my phone to order my meal and I've got hundreds of locations right there to choose from. So when the competition is nearly infinite on a digital device, that means, you know, real estate doesn't even matter anymore. It's just purely number of restaurant locations that is competing for attention.
Which restaurant chains are doing well in terms of expansion and growth? I mean, we're talking about with this show the ones that are like closing left and right, but there has to be some doing well.
For sure. And if you look at actually opening new locations, I'll start in the coffee category. Coffee right now is really hot, no pun intended. You know, there are a ton of new coffee players out there. Starbucks is not doing as well as it used to. And a big reason why is that you have these new brands coming in and stealing market share. So two that I would give you, one is currently in Columbus. One of them is about to move into Columbus. First one that's in Columbus is 7 Brew. So 7 Brew has a few locations around town, and it is a drive-through only beverage brand. Coffee is kind of leading the way, but it has also energy drinks and sodas and things like that. The next one that's coming into town is Dutch Bros. So same model. These are both drive-through only. They're built around speed and accessibility, getting you through. They have a wide variety of beverage options you can choose from. And 7 Brew and Dutch Bros, 7 Brew for context didn't exist until 2017, already has 500 locations around the world, or excuse me, around the country, and is growing very, very quickly. Dutch Bros has about 1,000 locations. It's been around for about 30 years, but is really ramping up now, because what they're finding is you can build small footprint drive-through only locations, and you can do that pretty cost effectively. And with a double drive-through lane, you can just crank people out. Mm. So these restaurants in particular are growing fast, but there are some other traditional restaurants that are also growing quickly. Raising Cane's is one that is still opening lots of locations. Jersey Mike's. So especially some of these larger fast casual brands, they're still adding a couple hundred locations every year. Chipotle's still growing at that same kind of pace as well. So you do see opportunity for further restaurant growth out there, but it's definitely consolidated in certain parts of the restaurant industry.
What you just said about drive-thrus is interesting to me. Do you feel like the Wendy's, the McDonald's, the Arby's, the Burger King's, do they need to not, maybe they don't need the whole restaurant, they just need a drive-thru, be faster?
Certainly. And you know, COVID really taught us that, you know, with so much technology innovation out there and being able to facilitate these transactions, whether that's on your phone, on a kiosk, on your computer, whatever it is that you really can facilitate food service without a dining room. And so that went to light speed in COVID, because that's how we were all interacting with our restaurants. So when restaurants discovered that, they all said, oh, well, let's shrink our restaurants. Let's, you know, have smaller dining rooms or no dining rooms at all. And let's just crank stuff out the drive-through window or through the delivery channels. Now that's starting to pull back, because what you're starting to see is actually customers are telling us and other researchers that they're actually more interested in dining out. You're always going to have that pendulum swing. And I think you had so much off-premises service through drive-through and delivery for so long, with COVID especially, that now they're actually, customers more want a little bit more of an experience. They're starting to say, well, I'm going to go to a dining room. So it's hard to say. Yes, the fast food restaurants especially, I think, can get rid of dining rooms, can have smaller footprints, can just facilitate the drive-through and delivery. But you always have to balance it, because there are a lot of people out there who want to get into a restaurant and experience it.
Oh, everyone wants it all. Everyone wants everything.
They want it all. And that's the tough life of a restaurateur, right? I mean, when you think about a restaurant and they're really small profit margins, they're really demanding customers, and everybody is your customer. It's kind of an overwhelming business, and that's why a lot of restaurants fail. But if you get it right and you serve the customer in that way that they want it, it's also magical.
So grocery costs, the recent government shutdown, they've been major economic concerns. How is the economy overall right now? I mean, it's hard to assess the economy at this moment, but how is it affecting the restaurant business?
It's brutal. Right now, it is absolutely brutal. Restaurants across the board, with some exceptions, are experiencing flat or negative traffic. And the reason for that is, when you have inflation high like it is today, when you have an economy as just as tough as it is for the average consumer, they pull back on their discretionary spend. And the first thing to go is usually restaurants. Mm-hmm. And so what you have right now is a lot of consumers who might go out. Let's say they go out usually on average 5 times a month to a restaurant. Well, they might be doing 2 or 3 times a month now. So they'll still go to restaurants, but they're pulling back on that frequency, because the restaurant experience has gotten so expensive. Fast food's gotten expensive with menu prices. Full service has gotten expensive when you have menu prices plus service. And when you have costs that high, people react by pulling back. So the economy, in the way it's affecting the consumer, restaurants are the first victim there, because of that fact that it's a little bit more of a, you know, discretionary spend. It's a little bit more of a luxury to some people. And so they're going to pull back and only prepare food at home more often than they were.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about current trends in fast food and fast casual restaurants with Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of The Nation's Restaurant News. So some restaurant chains seem to be popular for a while and then they disappear. I'll give you an example of one that I used to love, Chi-Chi's. You know, they used to be everywhere and now they're all gone. As someone who reports on the industry, what makes something like that happen, where there's a lot of them and then just poof? Like, I felt like it was like overnight, there's just no more.
It's a combination of factors. You know, first thing is going to be competition. Mm-hmm. So when you have so many competitors out there, It's just a tough business. And if you are not differentiating the business enough, if your menu is not unique enough, the experience is not unique enough, if your price point is not unique enough, well, the fact of the matter is that customers have a lot of other options and they might not come to your restaurant. But then you pair that with bad leadership. So a lot of restaurant companies, they just might have, you know, they might be mismanaged. Increasingly, a lot of them are owned by maybe a private equity firm that sees them as just a, you know, we just want to make some money off of it. You really need restaurant leaders that are devoted to the business, devoted to the people who work the business, devoted to the customers, and those are the top performers. There's no magic to what Chick-fil-A is doing. It just does what it does very, very well. It takes care of its employees very, very well, and its employees take care of their customers very, very well. And, you know, it sounds easy. It's not. But when you do that and then you have a unique product that people love, that tends to be what sets a restaurant up for success. So those are the factors that can get out of whack. Now, Chi-Chi's, it's a unique situation because they actually
had a problem.
They had a little bit of a food safety issue that killed people.
Oh, I know.
Rule number one, don't kill your customer.
Duly noted.
but I think more to your point where you have some other restaurants that have gone out of business. Often it's again, the leadership can't figure out a way to distinguish the business enough to get it to succeed. And in a competitive market like restaurants, you know, once that ship starts to sink, it's really hard to bail it out.
I was asking some friends last night, you know, what restaurants did you used to love that have disappeared? And one of them brought up, like my brother used to work at Don Pablo's. There's not as many of those anymore. And then Joe's Crab Shack. There used to be a Joe's Crab Shack in every like midsize / suburban city. Yeah. What, and, you know, those brands, they become household names. And then did Joe's Crab Shack go away because Red Lobster was doing better? But now you hear Red Lobster's not doing well. Like, how do you... I just don't feel like there's that many seafood restaurants. I'm surprised they didn't make it.
Seafood's hard to do at a chain level, especially. I mean, Look at Long John Silver's. Long John Silver's just said they're going to lean into chicken, which doesn't make any sense until you consider Americans are just obsessed with chicken and not seafood. So seafood is a little bit of a unique situation. Mm-hmm. But I think more to your point, if you look at the number of, or if you look at the restaurants from 2024, the data we have available, the restaurants that closed the most units, Joe's Crab Shack is on there. TGI Fridays on the border. What you have is a lot of full service restaurants that have traditionally, historically had these massive footprint restaurants that are expensive to operate. And so the full service industry in particular is going through this huge transition where, similar to fast food, they need to shrink their space a little bit, make it cheaper to operate, work in some technology, not to replace your servers, but to complement your servers. So you see a lot more of these restaurants with a tableside kiosk, a tablet to order from. And those are the restaurants that are figuring this out. Those full service, high, you know, really expensive restaurants to operate, those are the ones that are closing a lot of restaurants because they can't figure out how to make it profitable. And if you're not profitable, you're going to close restaurants.
What restructuring strategies are restaurants doing in order to stay competitive, you know, try to regain some market share? Is it Chick-fil-A doing the double drive-through and saying my pleasure at the end of everything?
For sure. Efficiency is everything, right? And so Chick-fil-A, I mean, some of the Chick-fil-A's here around town, they almost run like an airport. You almost have like air traffic controllers there kind of.
Except they're like 16.
Yeah, totally. But they're impressive, right? Because 16-year-olds are crushing and they're very friendly. But for sure, it's efficiency. And what you'll notice in that Chick-fil-A experience and a lot of other restaurant experience is more technology. And that might not be a robot server, but it might be more kiosks and things like that that are, they have the ability to not necessarily replace an employee. They won't tell you they're going to replace employees because that's not a great narrative. But again, they're going to make the employees' lives a lot easier to reallocate the labor to do things better, right? So more technology in the drive-through or throughout the operation. Some restaurants, some big companies, Wendy's is one, they announced that they're going to close hundreds of locations. Mm-hmm. And that might seem like a negative. Closing restaurants equals failure. But in fact, what they'll say, and I think is true, is they're optimizing the system. So if you have so many restaurants, so many Wendy's, for example, in a city, and you take away five of them, theoretically, the other restaurants in that city are going to do more sales because there's not as many Wendy's to choose from. And so a lot of the bigger chains are optimizing their systems to improve unit economics, which would be just the sales in each individual restaurant. But yeah, I think when you get to the nitty gritty, technology, efficiencies in the restaurant, these are the ways that a lot of companies are, you know, adding new tools and exploring new strategies that are going to help them be more profitable.
Yeah, that was my next question. Can you close a few dozen underperforming restaurants and save the company?
Yes. I mean, saving a company is a big You know, that's a big
thing. Too big
thing.
Of a question.
It's I mean, saving a company includes a lot of things. If you want to go back to your Chi-Chi's example, that's a brand that is actually making a comeback. They're going to open a new restaurant. And, you know, as far as something like that, you have people who have affinity for a brand. Mm-hmm. And because of that, restaurants don't tend to disappear completely. Quiznos is an example of a company that was massive, had 5,000 locations around the country. And now it only has like 100, and you're not going to see them anywhere, but they're still out there because usually restaurants, again, have so much affinity that they're hard to kill. But really, as far as, you know, not a brand dying, but just as far as being able to revive a restaurant, yes, it makes sense to close locations, sort of batten down the hatches, and then improve what you have existing. I'll throw another example out there that the entire industry is raving about right now, Chili's. Chili's 3 years ago, I didn't think I'd be talking about Chili's every day of my life, but here I am. Chili's 3 years ago brought in a new CEO, Kevin Hochman, from KFC. Kevin Hochman immediately set about with a three-year turnaround plan, which included improving operations and improving marketing and just in general making everything better. It didn't include adding menu items. In fact, they cut menu items. What they made sure that they were doing is that everything in the kitchen, everything in the dining room was done as good as it could be, that the employees were taken care of, were paid better, were happier. And then they brought in a new chief marketing officer who really leaned into social media especially. And so everybody knows that, you know, these mozzarella stick cheese pulls became popular on TikTok. Chili's really leaned into that. And what it has resulted in is unprecedented sales gains. They had a quarter, a couple quarters ago, where they did over 30% sales growth. They're still doing, I think their most recent sales growth was 21%. I mean, they're doing numbers that for a national chain is just unheard of. And it's the result of 3 years of putting in the work to make the restaurant excel at everything it does. And it's not flashy toys. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily just because of like a technology or anything like that. It's just because they made Chili's a place that people would enjoy. So when customers came in and they wanted to try that cheese pull for themselves, they said, wait a second, Chili's is cool. I'm going to come back to Chili's. And they did. And they keep going back to Chili's. So that's just a great example of how some restaurants are just improving what they do, doing what they do very, very well, and then letting that speak to the customer.
What I wanted to, you know, say with the idea of, like, you mentioned Chi-Chi's coming back. But what about the one location mom and pop restaurants versus these chains? Because now, you know, I said that I love Chi-Chi's back in the day. That was in my 20s. Now I'd probably rather go to just a like mom and pop Mexican restaurant instead. But not because I'm old and have different tastes, I guess. But how does that work with, like, you know, someone who has just like one restaurant competing with these chains? What's it look like for them in this economy?
Sure. Well, you know, for context, about 75% of restaurants in the United States are independent. So again, I gave you that million number for restaurants, give or take 750,000 independent restaurants out there. I mean, it's they're all over. And by the way, this is a great time to say support local, because those restaurants are really struggling. Ever since COVID especially, it's been incredibly hard to keep up with food costs, labor costs, occupancy costs. When you have a company like a Wendy's, you know, they are so big that that scale allows them to weather a lot of those higher costs and get to, you know, a couple years down the road when maybe inflation goes down and the economy is stronger. Independent restaurateurs do not have that luxury. And so every day is a battle. You know, there are, it's hard to pin this down, but the number that I often hear is that about 60% of restaurants close in the first year. And it's just a, such a difficult business. And again, you're competing with the chains. You know, the right answer here, I think, to your question is to say that there's room for everybody. And again, support local, go out and, you know, have dinner at the local restaurant and then spin through the drive through for lunch. There, there's no reason you can't do both and support both. But at the end of the day, we live in a convenience economy. I can pick up my phone and I have every option available to me for delivery and drive through. Independent restaurateurs are not as much there. Being able to facilitate drive through or certainly drive through, but being able to facilitate delivery, it's really hard for an independent restaurateur. You have to invest in packaging and technology. They can't do that. So it's tough out there for the independent operator. They're getting better. They're learning. These resources are getting cheaper. The technology is getting cheaper. So a lot of them are able to kind of adopt some of these new strategies. But, you know, they are certainly up against a lot more struggle than the big chains are.
We've been speaking with Sam Okus, the editor-in-chief of The Nation's Restaurant News. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk more about Columbus-based Wendy's and their plans to close 300 stores by the end of the year. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking about the fast food industry. The recent closing of the Wendy's restaurant in the University District could have been seen as a foreshadowing. Columbus-based Wendy's has announced plans to close about 300 stores by the end of the year. Does this signify a larger problem for Wendy's and fast food restaurants in general? Joining us for more on this story is Dan Eaton, reporter for Columbus Business First. Welcome back to All Sides, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So the first question is the obvious one. Why is Wendy's closing so many stores? Because 300 sounds like a lot.
Yeah. For a little bit of context, Wendy's, you know, they got about 600 or 6,000 stores in the U.S., and they close about 100 a year. So this is definitely up from that. There's sort of a normal flow of openings and closings that they do, but this is definitely more than what would be normal for them. Sales in the past year are just they're on a downward trend. So the brand has been struggling, and I think there's an opportunity to increase some profitability by getting rid of some underperforming stores.
Now, the closings are happening nationwide. Have they announced if it'll be a particular area or anything like that?
No, they haven't put out the list yet. They said they're in process now. The closings will start this year, but go into next year. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be a lot. I don't think it'll be a one weekend. Suddenly there are 300 fewer Wendy's. I think it seems like it's going to be rolled out at least over a few months.
And they said that it was going to be underperforming stores. They're not going to close the most popular Wendy's in the city.
Yeah. They said they're taking the process that they're going through is they're trying to see where they can make improvements. I think that's why it's a flexible number. Their term was mid single digits, which mathematically you estimate to be about 300 or so. But they're in the restaurants.
Oh, they gave
now.
You a percentage.
Yeah,
I see.
They gave it a percentage. That's why it's everyone's about 300. You mm-hmm. know, because it's probably 4 to 6% of the restaurants. So that math works out to about 300. So it could be more. Could be less. But they're in the process now of trying to figure out which ones they can improve and maybe rescue through better training, through technology. The ones that won't are going to be the ones that get cut.
Has Wendy's been performing better or worse compared to other burger chains?
Lately worse. Historically, Wendy's has done fairly well. Sales have been on a pretty steady upward trend for about a decade now. But in the last couple of quarters, their same restaurant sales have declined. Burger King and McDonald's, two of their biggest, most high-profile competitors, especially with burgers, they're up a little bit. And they're struggling as well, but they're still seeing at least a little bit of an increase, whereas Wendy's is down.
So Burger King has its frame broiled burgers. McDonald's has its fries and the Big Mac. What sets Wendy's apart from other burger chains?
Mm-hmm. Wendy's pitch is I think the same as it always has been, which is quality. Fresh, never frozen, which is something they always shout from the mountaintops, that their beef comes in fresh. It's not from a freezer. They're not defrosting it. They're putting it right on the grills. And so Wendy's pitch has always been a quality pitch. And I wonder if that's part of what is the struggle now. This is a little bit of my own speculation.
Quality costs money.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's where I was going. Is Wendy's is that reputation maybe hurting them a little bit because maybe they're perceived as being a little more expensive than the competition?
One thing that Wendy's said about these closing of these restaurants is that they hope ones nearby the closed ones will see gains in profitability. How does that work?
Depending on, the circle of reach for any given restaurant, right? If you close one, Wendy's, particularly like in this town, if you think about it, they're fairly populous. You don't have to go too far to find another Wendy's. So, the hope is that they close an underperforming one that, if you picture, circles, Venn diagrams, right? Mm-hmm. That the people on the edges will then gravitate to the other Wendy's that are performing better, and then the sales there will go up.
So you're willing to drive, if it used to be 3 minutes to a Wendy's, if you really want Wendy's, you're willing to drive 5 or 6 minutes because there'll still be another one.
Yeah, there's that bet, or maybe it's just a matter of going another direction, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're close to another Wendy's as well. It's just not the direction you normally go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Wendy's CEOs. Mm-hmm. So in July, Wendy's CEO... there we go. I had the wrong name again. I was telling you earlier, I was mixing up their names. Yeah. Okay, so according to the Wendy's interim CEO, who is right now, interim CEO is Ken Cook. Mm-hmm. He was talking about the underperforming restaurants, and he says that the goal is to address and fix those restaurants. Did Ken Cook explain how he's going to do this? Like, what does it mean to fix a restaurant?
Yeah. There's a couple things they're looking at. One, broadly for the brand, it's product and marketing. They want to do a better job on those fronts of just resonating with customers in general. As it comes to specific restaurants, they talked about training and operations going in and, in improving that workforce. They've also talked about technology. Wendy's has invested fairly heavily into technology, be that, AI menu boards, which are about in 100 or so restaurants, including several around Columbus, new technology in the kitchen to make things run, smoother. So those types of investments could potentially, improve some profitability and efficiency and then drive some more sales.
Now, I mentioned that Ken Cook is the interim CEO, and that is because in July, Wendy's old CEO, Kirk Tanner, stepped down. But he had only been in that role for a little more than a year. So right now, the interim CEO used to be the chief financial officer. So what is going on with Wendy's leadership? I mean, that seems like a lot of turnover.
I think that there was Wendy's has, I would say, performed well over the years, but not super well, and I think there was because Ken Cook is also actually fairly new to even the CFO role. He's been within the last year and a half, 2 years as well. So I think there was a push from the board to get some turnover in the executive suite to see what changes maybe that could produce. And Kirk Tanner's tenure there was very short.
I'm sure they weren't anticipating just a year with Kirk Tanner when they brought him in.
Well, his background was actually in packaged foods, and he had I can't speak to why he made the change, but he did move on to Hershey's, which is a more of his
foods.
Yeah, more of his background than restaurant operations.
Has Wendy said that they're going to look for a new CEO, or is Ken Cook going to move from interim to permanent?
A search is underway. I'm sure Ken is probably part of one of those candidates, I would assume. They are certainly searching for a new CEO.
So when I asked you, what sets Wendy's apart from the other burger chains, you mentioned that it's the fresh quality, fresh, never frozen burgers. But I feel like there's other things that sets Wendy's apart. They have different sides than any other restaurants. They have the Frosties, whereas McDonald's ice cream machine is always broken. Wendy's Frosties are always there. Has Wendy's had trouble just like leaning into other things too?
The product message, it is consumers are fickle, and you're dealing with price, but you're also dealing with like limited time offers. Sometimes those hit. Like last year, Wendy's had a big SpongeBob SquarePants promotion that by all accounts did very well for them.
Did they make a Krabby Patty?
They did.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
Did. Uh-huh. And with the Frosties, they have these seasonal flavors now, which I think generally have done well for them. But maybe if you have the flavor, your short-term offer that doesn't work or drive that extra traffic, then all of a sudden you're looking at quarters where your sales are down because, you know, last year you had some cool flavor that everybody latched onto, and this year, you know, maybe it wasn't as popular.
Their most recent thing was the Wednesday Adams. Mm-hmm. I don't know when quarter reports come out, if that did any well.
I listened to their most recent quarterly report. I will admit I cannot remember mm-hmm. if there was any commentary about
Wednesday.
about how Wednesday did for them. But I do know, like I said, last year with SpongeBob did very well for them. So, you know, that's also could be a reason why sales are down, right? When you have a super great promotion, you know, in the same period from a year before and you can't replicate that promotion, you know, there's, you know, that's going to hit your sales.
From what I've seen on Reddit, because I just did a little looking at Wendy's, they're trying to do something with, they're calling them their chicken tenders, they're calling them tendies, to sound like the word Wendy's, right? And they're running out of them everywhere. Have you heard about that?
Yes, yeah. So this, you know, it'll be interesting, the next quarter results, because the tendies are fairly new, so it'll be interesting to see if this is driving sales and if the next quarter will be an improvement. So you get this, you know, the positive effect of having a good promotion. Hmm.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Columbus-based Wendy's plans to close about 300 stores by the end of the year with Dan Eaton, a reporter for Columbus Business First. I wanted to take a few minutes to look at some other fast food / fast casual restaurants here in Columbus, because Wendy's isn't the only Columbus-based chain closing stores. There was recently an announcement that Ray Ray's is closing some locations. Can you tell me what's happening there?
Yeah, I will say up front, I've not been able to connect with the owner about his decision. So we're sort of left with what he has said publicly. But I don't think you have to go out on a limb. You know, it's a very, very meat heavy business, obviously, mm-hmm. in barbecue, and the beef costs in particular are very high. So I think if the sales aren't there, you know, the profits aren't there, and that's, you know, tough to run a location if you're not turning a profit out of it. And
I feel like Ray Ray's expanded very quickly. I knew them as just a food truck.
Yeah. They were pretty steady with their food trucks over the years. This has been a very busy year for them. Two of the locations that closed were actually full service restaurants, which were the first times that they did that. So I would also suspect that. You know, that's a pretty big learning curve, and you know, the sign that they closed was, you know, certainly indicates that they had struggles on that front. I don't know if it was prices, I'm sure were part of it, but, you know, labor, that's a whole new labor model versus a couple people on a food truck. Mm-hmm. They were in Marion and Johnstown, which are kind of different markets. Mm-hmm. You know, they're a little smaller than, I would like to talk to the owner at some point and ask them, you know, it'd be more expensive to open a Columbus restaurant, but, you
more
know,
people.
There's more people. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious what his thoughts on that would be.
The other one I wanted to talk about was Hot Chicken Takeover. Mm-hmm. It officially closed all its restaurants here. What is the story behind the closing of Hot Chicken Takeover?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty classic, sad restaurant tale of going through a couple different owners, and each owner, I think, taking, you know, a little more out of it. Mm. You know, it was originally founded here locally. It was sold to an operator who came in and, by all accounts, really cut back on quality to try to save money. It also expanded probably, you know, too fast. I think mm-hmm. that's fair to say. It expanded both in the latter days under its founder, but then the new owner came in and opened several new restaurants in Lewis Center and Gahanna, a few other places. It took a lot of costs out of it, and I think they lost just a lot of customers. I think a lot mm-hmm. of customers were displeased with those changes, and then it sold on to yet another owner who I think, you know, tried to right the ship in some ways, tried to return it, you know, at least in their words, to what it was, although I don't know that anyone fully bought that. So I don't know how much of it was a failing of that final owner or they just lost customers that they just could not bring back, you know, in the meantime.
Was it all Hot Chicken Takeovers or just the Columbus ones?
It was all of them. There were, when the second owner came in, there was still, I think, a location or two in Cleveland that eventually closed. But and then there was one in New York and kind of a food hall that was short-lived that was also tied to the second owner. But yeah, so by the time the third owner came in, they were just in Columbus. I think it was 7 restaurants. And here in the last, you know, 18 months, they've all now closed.
On a positive note, White Castle just opened its Restaurant of Tomorrow. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. It's, you know, White Castle's an interesting company to cover because they are so old, but they're pretty interested in innovation, you know, be that new technology or other things. So this space, it has, you know, a dedicated pickup area for third-party orders. You know, if you order White Castle through DoorDash or even for yourself, there's like a whole separate counter and window you can go to pick up that. So you're not in the normal, you know, flow of the restaurants. They can kind of divide that labor. They took a note from Chick-fil-A, and they have the, I'm blanking on the term, but they basically have a door at their drive-in so their employees can go outside to give people orders, not just through a window. So if you have someone who has a big Crave case order, they're not holding up the line to smaller orders behind them because you know, the employees can go outside and walk up to the cars in the line and hand deliver orders. So you get this, you know, it makes you faster and it makes you maybe a little more hospitable, a little friendlier to the customer.
When we were talking about Wendy's and I was like, how does Wendy's compare to McDonald's and Burger King? I didn't say White Castle. White Castle like not in that same category?
They're just so, you know, White Castle has, you know, 350, 400 locations. So they're by no means small, but certainly, you know, compared to 6,000, you know, Wendy's or however many McDonald's they are, you know, they are a competitor in the markets where they're present, but they just do not have, you know, a national footprint for restaurants, you know, the way a McDonald's or a Wendy's does.
We have been talking with Dan Eaton, reporter for Columbus Business First. Thanks for being here, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen at our website. That's wosu.org/allsides. You can subscribe to our podcast. Every episode is in our free mobile app. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.